Welcome to the IQ Meets EQ podcast. I'm Jackie Broman, Principal Solicitor at TBA Law and CEO of Legally Wise Women. I'm here as always with Ush Danik, former corporate lawyer, then head of HR, and now an emotional intelligence coach. Good evening, Ush.
I was going to say morning, Jackie, because I'm so used to Good evening, Jackie.
Yeah. Hi. We had meant to record. It feels so strange not recording in the morning.
It is a bit weird, isn't it? Or we could just pretend it's really early and still dark.
Yeah, we could. We could. Except that I've just had dinner and I know that I have to go and do dishes. So it didn't quite work.
Yes, we're doing an evening one today because we had a bit of a clash in the morning. So
Yeah, but there you go. Refreshing. Change is as good as a holiday.
Exactly.
And you've had a change with your hair. Tell everyone. You've done your hair at home.
Yes. So with my hair, yes. It was like getting to the point where I'm like, it's so grey.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm like so grey. So I'm like, I'm just going to dye it. And then I just thought I'm going to do something different and went for like a bit of red in it.
Very dramatic.
I know. Did it myself. I'm going to phase up to a bit darker next time in the next few weeks. Until we get the freedom to basically go in and actually get it done properly.
Yeah, yeah. What freedoms have you got back?
So for the vaccinated, you can do restaurants, you can do bars, you can do all of that sort of stuff, nightclubs, but you can't dance, which is really weird. And places of worship are open for the unvaxxed and vaxxed at the moment. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Sort of getting used to the new normal.
I know, like I drove to a client site today, which was like an hour and a bit away. And I sort of like messed up my timing. So I was like, when do I leave again? Because I was like, because you haven't driven for so long. Huh? And I literally just made it in time. But it was like, oh my God, that's like 2 hours of my day gone. Mm. And it's really bizarre because all this time we're sort of packing, like I know I have been working pretty much every hour. So I haven't even been taking that commute time off my day. I just tacked it on to do extra. So today it's like 8 o'clock and I'm still working till 8 o'clock because I've lost 2 hours in the car.
Yeah.
It's weird. I'm going to have to like readjust again.
And I guess you wouldn't have known how long it would take in terms of traffic because you don't know how many people are back on the road and not as well.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. But it was good. It was good to actually put fuel in my car and listen to a song that's more than 5 minutes. I actually had a playlist ready. That much excitement about driving today.
Yeah, sounds like a road trip.
Exactly.
Good, that's good. We just got released ourselves last night at midnight, but Melbourne's still locked down. So again, like just the divided state as to who's locked down and who's not and what you can do. You know, even though we're not locked down, sort of still living a fairly quiet life because you don't want to be the person who gets it and brings it back or anything like that. So, yeah, I think Melbourne's still got at least 10 days or so and then some easing. I think they'll still be restricted to distance.
Yeah. Hopefully, like you said, you don't go in and out because that's like mentally messing people up even more than if it, like at least with us, we've just been locked. Like we haven't been gone, oh, you can have a bit of freedom. Oh, no, we'll just snatch it away. Because that's a bit of a mind F at half the time, isn't it?
Very much so, very much so. Yeah. I think that particularly businesses that have to plan stock and, you know, particularly coming up to the weekend because quite often they announce it on a Thursday evening for the weekend and then they got to the point where they were announcing it Friday at 3 o'clock. So that people wouldn't try and escape. And then they got to the point where they announced it on a Sunday afternoon for the Monday. And it was like, great. So now we have to call all our staff on a weekend to work out the logistics. It's just, yeah, it was hard. But I know that a lot of people have had it a lot harder. And I mean, it just, you know, it, even the interview for today reminds me, it was a bit reflective. And all the people working about supply chain and the constant disruption and all of that. So it's good to be in services in some way.
It is, isn't it? I know we are. And you know what? We are lucky. Like, you know, you look at other places and, you know, it's that saying, isn't it, that you can throw all your troubles in a pile in the middle And then when it's time to collect them, you're going to run for your own. Not what anyone else is. So, but yeah, I think we're blessed in more ways than we realize at the best of times.
Yeah, very true. It's given me a good chance over the last couple of weekends to read a few good fiction books. So that's been pretty cool. I haven't read so much fiction for a while. And also getting into a couple of leadership books. I finally found a female Australian who is writing some good leadership books that I can relate to. So I'll try and get her on the podcast. Shout out to Midja Fisher. Pretty awesome stuff. Her latest book's called Take Off the Cape, From Superhero to Super Coach.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it has been pretty good. So doing some reading. It's good.
Yeah, I haven't read fiction forever, to be honest. Like anything I'm reading at the moment is like work-related or studies.
Yeah. Oh, well, you're doing so many things. You're producing so much and then you're doing that
dent. Yeah, which is amazing. But yeah, and we're literally just creating tons of IP, which is amazing. Yeah. But yeah, your whole focus is constantly on strategy and business. And I don't think I've even turned the TV on for like a 6-week period, actually. It's like been crazy.
Wow. Good not to watch the news.
I know, exactly.
Well, let's jump into the interview. I only just spoke with Emma last night, actually. Yeah. So it's very fresh. So Emma Koth, she and I were actually on a series of 5 presentations that Agriculture Victoria organised for small scale producers recently. Mm. So I was the token lawyer talking about what they need to consider for the growth of their businesses. And Emma, she's a managing director at an accelerator called Rocket Seeder. She's also a co-founder at Grow Agri-Food Tech Accelerator in Singapore. So she's got 2 accelerators on the go, and both are very much around sustainable food and agriculture and innovation, and tech's all wound in there as well. So really interesting sectors that we haven't really heard from much before. So let's have a listen. Emma, welcome to the podcast. How are you this evening?
I'm good, thank you, Jackie.
It's funny because when Usha and I catch up, we catch up at 6 in the morning. So at the start of this podcast, I'm saying good morning and now we're saying good evening. So Emma, I just said before we started recording, I, you know of you now and what you're passionate about with the incubator and everything that you're doing, but I don't know much actually about what brought you to that and where you started from. So I'd like to go all the way back to when you were a little girl. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
Oh, that's a really funny question, because I wanted to be a farmer, or specifically a lady farmer.
What's the difference?
And well, you know, well, it wasn't legal then. It wasn't legally recognised back in, you know, it was the late 1970s, female farmers. It was only, I think, 1994, so perhaps I was a bit before my time. But, yeah, I remember drawing a picture in prep, so I would have been 4 or 5. Mm. And then, you know, they asked people, as they do when you're in prep, in primary school, what would you like to be when you grow up? Mm. And I thought, I want to be a lady farmer. And so I drew a picture of myself, and I don't know, I'll have to dig it out. Hopefully mum and dad have still got it. Probably wasn't really good, so maybe.
Good old mum and dad. I wonder if they do still have it. So what sort of farming did you envisage yourself doing?
Well, I have a sneaking suspicion it may have been something to do with the fact that I wanted a horse. Ah. And yeah, but no, I did actually, you know, have that, the whole farming thing in mind, in terms of, you know, having a job and a career sort of thing on the farm. Mm. Yeah, so my job and my life was on the farm. So it wasn't just about riding horses, I don't think. But I ended up riding horses, so I got my wish. And I really enjoyed that as a young lady. Yeah. And I was lucky enough to grow up actually by the coast in a place called Ocean Grove, which was great place to grow up in, because you could go to the beach, you know, after school in the summer, and so that was fantastic. And then I could ride horses, you know, after school and on the school holidays, and yeah, it was pretty ideal really.
Yeah, it does sound pretty idyllic. My extended family had a beach house down at Ocean Grove as well. And now my parents live down on the Ballerine. Yeah, I love it. It's changed a lot. There's a lot more houses down there now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, this was in the 70s and 80s, so it was quite different in those days. But, yeah, still a very nice part of the world, very nice beaches. Mm.
Yes, very much so. Hmm. So the dreams of the farm must have gone out the window at some point. What did you gradually end up doing? What's your career path taken you? What did you do after school?
Well, I think I might start back a little bit earlier. And I think I had an entrepreneurial sort of spirit, again, being cynical about myself, could have been just about money, but
whatever it takes.
But, you know, I had a Christmas club going with my family and when I was really young, and because the banks had, you know, interest-free bank accounts, and then you, you know, put the money in during the year and then take it out just before Christmas and buy presents with it. So I did that, and, of course, you know, most of my family members gave me the interest that they'd earned. So, yeah, as well, that was pretty nice. I gave them back their money, but they said keep the interest. So I did that for a few years. That was reasonably profitable. And then I just had a number of, I started working really when I was about 12 and finding anything I could do, you know, making parts for air conditioners and things like that. And it was real a bit random. Working in the milk bar down at the beach, I did that. And sorry, Jackie, illegally, because I was 13 and, yeah. 14. Yes. And yeah, just working in a local supermarket and the dress shop. And so unlike my children, I couldn't wait to go out and work. So I did that, you know, for a long time. And then I did a commerce degree at university and down at Deakin in Geelong. And I was quite young. So I finished when I was 20. And still really didn't know what I wanted to do, but I wanted to do something in international business. And I just had sort of, you know, it was sort of pre-internet days and hadn't done a lot of international travel myself, but really wanted to learn about the world. I'm sure I would have been a UN global shaper in they didn't have anything such a thing in those days. They didn't have really international exchanges at university, none of that. Which I would have loved, which is a shame, but it's great that kids get that opportunity these days. And, yeah, so what I did is I saved up from, you know, working at university throughout university days and did the backpacking thing, which, you know, was pretty popular back then. When was it? Early to mid-90s. And really just sort of pushed myself into a lot of the travelling I did by myself. Because I really wanted to get outside of my comfort zone and I think get to know myself and caught up with some friends and did that for a while and then came back and then, you know, thought I'll get into my international career now. And I got a job in a bank in international. So, and I really did not like it. Yeah, it's not my, I think it's sort of like maybe large organisations, but it was very, when would it have been, 1994 or 5? And it was very male dominated, can we say, back then. And I just did not like, and I mean, I'd been to a girls' school and raised by my mother and my father to, you know, believe that I could do whatever I wanted to do, that gender wasn't a barrier and all of that sort of stuff. And then you know, get thrown into a bank. Mm. And it's like, you know, it's like, what? You know, okay, you can't get a promotion unless you're, you know, going out with someone or you're married to someone or engaged to someone or, you know, it was just not good. Anyway, so then I got invited to an interview to work for an export business. And because I was into the, you know, I'd done an international trade certificate and I was learning Mandarin at RMIT. And so obviously I had an interest in that area. So I got the job and it was exporting food and agricultural products, a little bit of import and, you know, all sorts of things. It was a trading business. And that, I guess, that was my entree into the food and agriculture sector. I've never looked back. It's I've seen it, you know, over and over again with other people. It's sort of once you get involved in the sector, it's really hard to get away from it because it's, and I shouldn't say it that way, but I should say it in a more positive way, because there are just so many issues involved in the sector. It's sort of, you know, we eat and drink, it's just so critically important to us as humans, but it's also important the way that the food gets to you, how it's grown. And we're seeing that now play out, which is fantastic. You know, we've got COP26 coming up, whether, you know, is Scott going or not? Is our pump going or not? It looks like it's not, but anyway, which would be disappointing and embarrassing. But anyhow, I think that particularly our agricultural industries in Australia are doing a lot of work in not just sustainability, but really understanding their role and communicating that in climate action. And I guess, yeah, I'm really proud of that, and I'm really proud to be part of the sector. And, you know, I've always seen farmers in particular as stewards of the land, and, you know, 90-something%, whatever, but most of them do the right thing. And, you know, I think not a lot of people recognise that, and all that we can do to be supporting them to be sort of reversing climate change, if you like, is, you know, we should be doing as much as we can, basically. That's government and the rest of society. Consumers have a lot of power in terms of what food that they produce, purchase. So whether they purchase locally, ethically, in terms of, you know, whether it's animal welfare or sustainability. Yeah, so it's just a really important, you know, issue at the moment. Always has been. Of course, we've had things like land care and so forth. So, but I think now with, you know, the really, really serious climate or challenges around climate and the recognition of, and there's a real role that I guess farmers and food producers more generally, people, you know, involved in the sector all along the supply chain can have, we can, you know, and consumers, as I said, you know, we can vote with our mouths and our, you know, wallet. So, yeah. And I guess, you know, just to finish off of where did I get here, you know, I started in the food sector, say, in the mid-90s, and then I did a master's in regional agribusiness clusters in, when was that, 2000, a research master's, and then I got a job as a result of doing that. Doing a poster presentation at an international agriculture conference in Sydney, and my future boss came up to me and said, "This is fantastic, Emma. You know, would you like a job? Yeah, would you like to work for the government?" And I was like, "Oh, never thought of working for the government before." But anyway, I had 11 years there in total, and worked with some absolutely amazing people that are still friends to this day, and had, you know, largely a really amazing experience, and would absolutely encourage anyone to take the opportunity to work in government, particularly in, well, essentially it's the Department of Environment, it's what it is now, Agriculture Victoria. I mean, you're just surrounded by the most amazing people, all different sorts of scientists. It's a really, you know, intellectually stimulating environment to be in, and I learnt so much about so many things, and just never would have had that immersed in that amount of knowledge if I hadn't said yes that day to joining the Victorian government. So, and then I did a PhD, which I haven't finished yet, got a full draft about exporting food to Asia, which was sort of largely the area that I've worked in. And now where I am now with Rocket Seeder came from an interest in the, I guess, the startup community and seeing what was happening around me and wanting to learn about it. So I did a startup boot camp down at Deakin Geelong, because I'm Deakin alumni, and over a weekend, and learnt, you know, all about the business model canvas and so forth that, you know, I'm talking about all the time now, but it was me about 5-6 years ago. And then found myself my way to Rocket Seeder. I've just received some funding from the Victorian government, and I think the rest is history. And now I've got another role as interim CEO of the Australian Agritech Association, which again is, you know, another quite different experience, because effectively that's a new sector which is alongside the agriculture sector. So it's another dimension, and learning a lot about technology, the use of technology in the sector, you know, whether that's sort of with water, reducing the amount of water used in agriculture. Yeah, there's a lot of talk around connectivity, particularly in regional areas. And yeah, so it's been fascinating to be part of that. Passionate about Rocket Seeder and supporting early stage startups, and yeah, that's where my real passion lies, and will do for a long time, because there's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, wow, there's so much to unpack in everything you've done. But I'm just thinking the whole time you were talking was that, you know, people who live on the land have often been, well, they're far more connected to seasonal and climate change and those sort of things, so they've been probably ahead of the curve in terms of thinking and talking about climate change and sustainability for a long time. But the amount of change you would have seen over the last 25 years in that sector just sort of blows my mind even thinking about it, because you're absolutely right in that the industry is running well and truly in advance of the government, because they just know that it has to be done. And it just sort of, I was grinning most of the time because I just thought how proud I am of, you know, the innovation and things that are coming out, and you're at the forefront. I can just hear the passion oozing out, particularly now with Rocket Seeder, because of all the interesting and exciting ideas, I guess, you come across. And I would almost hate to be the one to turn away ideas, because I bet you just have so many thrown at you all the time.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, you know, what right do we have, or I have, to say that one idea is better than another? You know, we don't, but we are restricted in the programs that we run by the, you know, the fund, because we're a not-for-profit. So the funding that we get when we run the programs and how many people we can have in the programs, and yeah, so there are restrictions around that, so we sort of can't sort of support everybody. But having said that, I try to be as supportive personally as I can with other people, and, you know, even outside of Australia. But I'm, you know, focused on Australia, even though I do have a business in Singapore where we do support startups from around the world, which is really exciting. But at the end of the day, I'm, you know, pretty much focused on the, you know, helping to build the innovation ecosystem in the food and agriculture sector in Australia. So that's really what drives me at the end of the day, and to do that as sustainably and ethically as possible. So, you know, one of the things that we focus on and try to align ourselves with is the Sustainable Development Goals. I just think that they're really good, well, they're goals, you know, and but anyone can, you know, I guess, work out how they fit into the 17 goals. And also, like, I was a judge for the Food Systems Summit SME competition this year. And so I was looking at entries from people from all around the world. And I just, at the end of it, I think I've, you know, looked at 40 in total. And in the end, I just thought, you know what, I've got applications from people in Melbourne or Victoria or Western Australia or whatever. And then, you know, Pakistan and, you know, Uganda and South America, you know, all around the world. And really they were all sort of doing the same thing, and they were driven, and that's why they applied. It was the type of person that applied that even knew about sustainable development goals or this competition, because they were very values and purpose driven. And, you know, they were, and the trend is globally around, you know, supporting local. Yeah, so it doesn't matter whether it's a developing country or a, you know, developed country. The trend in the food sector is the same, and it's good people trying to do good things, and, you know, to support, you know, local, regional, rural businesses. Quite a big emphasis everywhere on females, which is great, and always like the ones that are 100% driven by males, but the business model is to support females. There was one like that, and they lost some points from me, unfortunately. A bit harsh, but, you know, it's like, isn't there one female that you can include as a co-founder or on management team or something, surely? But anyway, yeah, no, I was, it just really struck me how similar the issues are all around the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just love working with females that, you know, I just find that really inspiring. You know, they're not settling with, you know, the same old. They really want to make a difference in their communities, for future generations. They just want to make a difference. And, yeah, hugely inspiring. And I just love it.
Wow. I don't think we've had anyone on the podcast who has been quite so just oozing of passion about everything that they're doing. So it's very impressive. And I guess it's one of those sayings that you do what you love and you never work a day in your life. And that's definitely you. Maybe that's the title of this podcast.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure I go that far, but I mean, it's certainly not easy. I mean, people don't see the, you know, they have a go at, oh, you know, you're an accelerator, there are so many accelerators, what does it even mean, startups, you know, all this sort of stuff. At the end of the day, we don't, you know, work with startups as such. We work with innovative people, you know, wanting to make a real change in the sector. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that doesn't require, you know, technology. So, you know, the ag tech role that I do is related but separate to Rocket Cedar. So if we wanted to support, you know, technology or agri-food tech startups only in our programs, there wouldn't be many people to support, unfortunately, at the moment. But also it wouldn't be as fun, wouldn't be as satisfying, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole other interesting piece, isn't it, about innovation versus tech. And yes, they sometimes go hand in hand, but they're certainly not necessarily overlapping all the time. So yeah, fascinating. And I guess, again, like as you say, you're not a startup, you are someone who maybe just has this innovation project that's taking that to the next level. So again, I mean, just the energy and the ideas alone would be very inspiring.
Yeah. And sometimes it's hard work, but sometimes, you know, you learn so much. It's like anything, you know, you get more out of it than what you put in. So it's a bit of everything, really. But over and above, it's, yeah, really enjoyable. And what's, you know, it gets me out of bed every day. We have a really good board now, and we're just recruiting for a new chair and a couple of board members, and we've actually, you know, had some really good people put themselves forward, and so we're really, you know, going to that next stage and sort of effectively, you know, doubling our board, our capacity, and ramping things up. And, you know, that's just more people like ourselves that are passionate about, you know, supporting innovative people in the sector and doing some really good things, like with our food waste and loss program coming up. You know, the focus going forward is absolutely about the environment and, you know, climate. And, we do focus a little bit on health and healthy food, but definitely the focus is on environmental going forward.
It sounds like it's almost, you know, all boats are rising with the tide that's rising that you're helping create. So,
yeah. Wish us luck.
I do. It sounds really, really cool. So, I mean, with all the experience you know you have now and all the things that you've learnt, going back to the girl who's just finished her commerce degree, before you go travelling, what advice would you give to her?
Oh, just, you know, take it easy. Don't put too much pressure on yourself, and enjoy the ride. And yeah, look, I think I'm a sort of a bit of a go with the flow type of person anyway, but sometimes I do put a little bit too much pressure on myself. Yeah, again, that could be a good thing and a bad thing. The reality is you can't change the past, and I'm pretty happy with my journey so far, and I'm looking forward to an even better 20 years of my career.
Yeah, isn't that even a nice reflection in itself?
Yeah.
You are where you're meant to be.
It's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Now I just need to get to the hairdresser, and then I'll feel okay. and get back to Pilates.
I was going to say that, you know, with all the lockdowns we've had, and also, you know, it's been a couple of hard years in terms of coming out of drought, and then there's been bushfires. And so you would have had other, you know, regional businesses also facing that, as well as then rolling lockdowns and difficulties with export and the supply chains going up to, yep.
Oh, yeah. There's always someone in a worse situation than you. And yeah, I know lots of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel, you know, because I live in Melbourne and, you know, obviously don't have a farm. I I'm not under threat from, you know, floods and drought and fire, and particularly people, poor people of East Gippsland, you know, they've just been, and then they had, you know, to be in dairy in East Gippsland, even worse, because they had the dairy crisis about 5 years ago. And then it's just been one thing after another. And it's, yeah, I think you said before how resilient they have to be, and they are. But at the same time, they, you know, do need our support. And, you know, we can't forget them. We need to support them. And it's,
yeah,
we need to find ways to do that, because I sort of just feel that they have been forgotten. I know that they feel like they've been forgotten to a certain extent. So how do we do that?
Well, that's an interesting thing as well. How do you make people feel like they're supported, particularly when we're potentially struggling to support ourselves as well? So when you are supporting people yourself and they have difficult times and challenges and they're leaning on you, what do you do for yourself? Is there things that you, other than going to the hairdresser?
yeah. Well, correct. Look, I think that's the first thing, but that's one good thing about being a mother, is because I have my eldest turned 16 yesterday, and then I have a 13-year-old, both boys. So the first thing that I learned as a mother is that it's how important it is to look after yourself, because if you don't look after yourself, you can't look after your child. And it's just so obvious when you become a mother, because they're so dependent on you, and you go, wow, you know, this is such a big lesson in life, and I didn't even really think about it until now. And it's, you know, it applies to, you know, all species, or, you know, anything that has a child, a baby. I think it's seahorses, isn't it? The males look after the
they do
baby.
And I think emu males look after the babies too.
Okay,
correct me if I'm wrong, anyone, someone will tell me I'm wrong.
Although men the younger generation, they're a lot better than
our parents.
Well, that's right, yeah. And even when I was a mother, but we won't go there. But yeah, I think that's the first thing you learn. And so yeah, it is very important to look after your physical and your mental health. So you can look after others. So now it's obviously I still have to look after my children, but I, you know, do have these people that I support in our programs. And, you know, I know when I did a couple of programs online, one in Singapore and one in Melbourne last year in lockdown, which was, you know, pretty horrific in Melbourne. And yeah, just going through those times when you were there to support others, that's what your role was, like constantly day after day after day. And then you're sort of thinking, oh, well, I can't even look after myself. And, you know, I don't want to even get out of bed today. And yeah, so it was really tough just putting, you know, one foot in front of the other last year. But, you know, by this year we were experts. And I'm not saying it was easy, but it's a lot easier this year than last year. Really good experiment in, human resilience.
Yeah.
We don't really want to go through again. But again, like every day you sort of thought, well, there's so many other people, like just about everyone else, in a worse situation than I am. So, but, you know, still it was pretty hard. And you had to look after yourself. And it was just normal things like, you know, appreciating just being outside and being able to go for a walk. And then you really notice the difference with the weather, because if it's pouring with rain, you can't have your nice walk, which makes you feel better. And you can't get that fresh air. It's sort of like, you know, just that basic oxygen in life that keeps you going from day to day. It was really sort of quite, yeah, Basically, yeah. But anyway, let's not talk about that anymore.
No, well, hopefully we're nearly at the tail end of it. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So for those who want to get in touch with you to either, you know, learn more about the sector or discuss more things around sustainability or to support and learn more about Rocket Cedar, where can they go to find you?
Well, either go to my LinkedIn profile, so search Emma Coates, or the Rocket Cedar website. And my details there, my email address is there. So either of those two ways you can find me and just send me an email.
Wonderful. And you're so responsive. So, yeah, hopefully you don't get flooded.
Because, yeah. Yes, I know you'll press play on this, you'll release it and I'll be inundated.
I hope so. I hope that it stimulates a lot of conversation because there are so many things that you raise that bring things to the forefront of particularly my mind that aren't always at the forefront, and yet you're in it all the time. So thank you for that, and thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Jackie. It's been lovely. I could talk to you all night, or, you know, maybe every night we could, you know, half an hour. Yeah, it would be nice that hopefully we get to work together again somewhere along the way.
No doubt, no doubt.
Yeah, awesome.
I was going to say that actually, that we actually, this is our first agricultural themed interview. So yeah, we've had first one that's in agriculture.
That's right. We have interviewed Rebel Black before, who does a lot of agribusiness stuff. But
that was for remote though, wasn't it? So like she helps the businesses that are really remote and creates that community for them. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas Emma's like diving into the agribusiness from more of a grower and supply chain, and then now also into tech innovation, which I think sounds quite interesting.
But you wouldn't have put the two together, would you? Agriculture and tech.
Yeah, I know. It's almost complete opposites. Like
it's like salted caramel. It's like amazing when you have it, but the thought of it.
Yeah. Like, that's right. Yeah, like a really traditional sector that is so earth-based, and then to have tech introduced. However, having said that, you know, because I live regionally, I see a lot of tech around water and testing of soil, and then also management of herds, but I haven't known much about, you know, growing of crops so much.
Yeah.
And I'm particularly thinking about market gardens as well. So, I mean, it just blows my mind, I suppose, how much is going on out there, that how advanced things are getting that we really don't know about.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, it's almost like out of sight, out of mind. Like if it's not in your periphery of what you do for a living or even who you connect with in your network that's not in that industry, it's almost like when you hear this stuff, you go, wow, that exists. Mm. And people actually do this for a living, like make money out of it and pay their bills from this stuff. But yeah, it is. And it's fascinating. And I guess that's one of the beautiful things about all the people we've interviewed on our podcast is that, you know, we've just learned so much that we'd never have known otherwise.
Completely. Yep. Expanding us so much. And, you know, the supply chain, the local supply chain, particularly because of all the restrictions we've had, has been at the forefront of my mind. And particularly since we interviewed Kate with her locally made jumpers. And by the way, if you haven't ordered one yet, she's now doing some with like sparkle screen printed paint, so the words are actually sparkly. So
amazing.
Yeah, but yeah, the supply chain stuff, made local in every aspect of the supply chain and grown local, and you know, not all this highly packaged stuff that we're getting more and more of, and not knowing where our vegetables and our, you know, the basis of our diet is actually coming from, like is it Aussie? And that is becoming a little bit more important to me, I think.
Absolutely. And I guess, you know, it's that whole awareness piece, isn't it? That if you don't even know, like you don't think about it, and then someone brings it to your attention, you go, oh, yeah. Like you said about the sweatshirts, it's like, you know, combining all of those local businesses and communities and making it Australian made and being proud of that. And yeah, it's the same with like your food, isn't it? Like, how is it grown? Where does it come from? All that sort of stuff that you just take for granted, because we're in such a busy, fast pace of life that unless you're in that frame of mind or interested in it, you don't think, I never think about it, if I'm honest. Like, it's not a thing for me. I just go, yeah, I'm just buy my food from the supermarket and, you know, come home, cook and eat, because I'm not a chef. I don't have those interests. I'm one of those people that I eat to survive. So like it just wouldn't even occur to me with all of the stuff that, you know, that goes through that process.
I've also heard recently, it must have been on someone else's podcast, because they were talking about the tomato growers that used to be a huge industry around where I live in the Goulburn Valley, and how we now get so many tomatoes, canned tomatoes from Italy. Yeah, that's right. It was something around slavery, actually, because they don't pay the people who pick those tomatoes a living wage. Yeah, it was an interview with the woman from Fair Trade. And so now I've been conscious of paying the extra 50 cents a can just to get the Australian diced tomatoes. And just little things like that. It's just being a little bit more conscious and realizing that, you know, if I go and buy a whole lot of $10 t-shirts, they're probably again made by someone who's not getting a living wage. And so why don't I buy like only two, you know, $50 t-shirts from the local market instead from someone who's stitched them locally?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, the only time I sort of think about it is when you go to the markets. Actually, you know what? I remember when I moved to Australia, I'm talking about like 16 years ago, and I wanted to sell some stuff in a market, but it was stuff that was ethnically Indian, East meets West type of thing. So, like scarves, cushion covers, just things that looked a little bit different. And I remember it was a real struggle to find a stall that I could sell it at. And I didn't even know, because I went and bought all this stuff to go, I want to sell it. And the markets are like, well, where's it made? And I'm like, India. And they were like, we can't sell it. It's like Paddington Market, I couldn't sell. Rocks Market, I couldn't sell. And I was like, shit, I didn't even think about that. Like, it just wasn't even a thing in my head. I just thought, oh yeah, I can buy something and sell it. But you can't. Like, they were like really strict. And there was only one or two markets that allowed me to actually sell those products.
Interesting. Wow.
And
And that's quite a while ago then.
was
That's
ages
quite.
ago, and it was really strict. But yeah, so it's good that, you know, it made me think about it, because like I said, it wasn't even a thing for me. I just thought I can sell it. Never even occurred to me that it would be an issue because it's not Australian made and I live in Australia.
Well, I mean, I'm also thinking that, I mean, it's not like you're some hinky white person that's come with Indian stuff. Like, someone could also assume that, oh, you've got family or connections that
In
you're getting
Australia,
this through. But even still, they asked. So, you know, I guess that shows a hell of a lot of integrity.
it does, yeah, absolutely. That's what I mean. And it got me thinking about it as well. Yeah, no, I think it's great. And just to raise that awareness of everyone's, yeah.
The other thing that Emma touched on, which we haven't really spoken about much on this podcast at all, is climate change. Like, it's never really come up with any guests that we've spoken
No.
about, has it?
No, it really hasn't. No.
And I know that in whether you call it global warming or not, we know that the climate is always in periods of change and cycle. And that industry particularly has been in and out of drought a couple of times in the last decade in various places. Some places are still in it. Some places have had a couple of floods. We've had so many fires, all those things. And, you know, resilience is a theme of this podcast too. There's so much resilience in the people that we've had on, but this also focused on, I guess, the resilience of a type of person or resilience of communities that know that this is something that they live through regularly.
Yeah, but it's also the unknown of it, isn't it, that builds the resilience? Because, like, if you look at what's happened from a climate perspective just in 2 years, floods, fires, you know, everything, it's just crazy. Like, even if you look at it today, like in Sydney, we've had incredible hail. But last week, I was like in singlets going for my walks because it was like so hot. And yeah, today it's like, how are we getting golf sized balls worth of hail? And you know, isn't it? It's again, if it's not in your periphery, it's you go, well, yeah, things are changing, things are happening, but you either put your blinkers on and go, I don't really want to know because it's not going to impact me, but it might impact my kids.
Mm.
Or you're going to be someone that goes, you know what, I need to know about this and teach the next generation about this.
Mm.
And I know Gia in school is doing so much on climate change, more than I even knew about. So learning from her has been pretty awesome as well.
Mm. Yes. I mean, her generation is going to change the world, really. I mean, we grew up thinking that our generation would, but we have tend to sort of just been stuck systemically. Like we thought we could change the world, and then we get out into the world and we're like, oh my God, it's not like they told us it was going to be.
Yeah, exactly. And you're almost a bit shell-shocked, aren't you, when you try and do it because it's not what you thought it was going to be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, we try not to date our podcasts too much, except that obviously when we're talking about coming in and out of lockdowns and things. But you know, we've got this Glasgow summit coming up for climate change, and I'm just embarrassed by our country. I'm just embarrassed by the response, the fact that there's even doubt that our leader will not be there, mm-hmm. and yet our former prime minister is going there. And so that is just going to look really strange.
Yeah, as to why we're not doing anything or even contributing or thinking about it.
That's right. Yeah,
but then it's people like me, right, that don't think about it, and I admit that I don't. You know, you almost need that leadership to sort of drum it and bring it to people's attention so that we actually go, you know what, we do need to actually talk about this and make an effort and learn what we can do, you know, individually, so that collectively there's a bigger difference.
Mm, absolutely. But yeah, you're right. We need the leadership from the government, because there's plenty of leadership in the private sector. And, you know, as Emma has been talking about, like the amazing innovations and things that are coming through for, you know, increased productivity and efficiency with water and all these things that are coming through private sector, because there is no government leadership on it, and yet industries know that they've got to get out ahead of it. Even if they don't necessarily believe in climate change, they know the rest of the world is heading there economically, and so there's no point in being stuck 50 years ago because you're going to be left behind.
Yeah, so true.
I'm embarrassed to be tarred
with the same brush.
Exactly. That's exactly right, because I think the majority of Australians want the government to take action and
have a voice, right? It's almost like,
mm-hmm.
you know, your voice is dampened because of the leadership not making a sound about it. So you almost feel like, well, what's the point?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Jackie for Prime Minister.
You know, I've thought on and off about politics, but I think it's so toxic that it makes it unattractive for people who...
I agree. I just look at it and go, I have no time for this because I just don't want to listen to it. I don't believe it. I think there's so many personal hidden agendas that I really question, is it for the good of the people?
Yep.
Versus... God knows what, really, popularity, certain, you know, decisions that have to be made for the sake of being made.
That's right. And you're seeing more progress in areas other than government.
Yeah.
So it was actually really interesting to hear Emma talking about the public service, particularly in the ag space, and talking about the fact that there's a whole lot of bright people and really forward-thinking people in that area of the public sector, because I know that in other areas in the public sector it's just being stripped bare and really diminished. However, maybe that's more at the federal level because Emma's got more experience at the Victorian state level. So yeah, it's interesting to see where each individual government is investing as well, because all the states have made commitment for climate change and yet our federal government won't.
Yeah, but what's the point of the state, because we're not represented at the state level. So it makes no difference, really.
Not to big business, that's right.
I mean, not to big business, because it's like, well, what's the point? that it's almost like having a one person opinion, isn't it?
Yeah, almost. Please. That's right. Or like it's like a little group of primary school kids going, yes, this is the way we're heading, but the adults are all like, no.
Yeah, totally different direction.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that talking to Emma just had this different flavour to it. And even though she was, you know, quite spoken, the passion and the depth of her commitment were just so strong that as she was talking, you know, I was just sort of grinning ear to ear for most of it because I was just having little sparks of insight constantly. Mm-hmm. And, I like intelligent conversation that sparks me thinking in different ways. So it was just good.
Yeah. And her passion sort of carried through, didn't it? From like wanting to, you know, own the farm and, you know, have that from when she was younger to, you know, that theme of ag has sort of somehow been woven through that journey to get her to where she is now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the kind of person that she gets to work with probably has a lot to play in there as well. But, you know, another insight that I've had in the last week or so, particularly at the end there talking about self-care as we always do, because, you know, you can do all the self-care things, but just like I've just said, it is having a deep intellectual conversation that really stimulates me to think that is actually my self-care. I've only realized this recently and I don't know why it's taken so long, but you know, you can eat well, you can sleep well, you can go for your walks and light a candle and, you know, rub oil and moisturizer into your hands and your face and all that sort of stuff, but none of it makes me feel as refreshed as a great conversation.
Well, that's your self-care, isn't it?
Yep. And I've only just realized. So thank you so much for, you know, being a co-host and having great conversations all the time.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, it's been amazing. It's just like I just learn so much every time. Like, you know, it's always like one thing I take away from all of our guests and go, what am I going to do differently or what can I think about differently or implement or, and yeah, it's been incredible.
Yeah. Well, again, I hope this stimulates a lot of thought and people reaching out to us and wanting to continue the conversation. You know, a lot of things there that Emma was talking about, she's provided ways to get in touch with her as well. And, you know, the other thing we haven't really touched on is just how amazing it would be working with people who are constantly innovating and looking at ideas and I can tell that she found it hard sometimes to refuse ideas that didn't quite fit the criteria, but just to see the ideas that are coming out there, how inspiring. So, yes, we know how to get in touch with Emma, but how can people get in touch with you, Oosh?
Yeah, I'm at eq.academy. You can find me there.
Wonderful. We post all these episodes at iqmeetseq.com.au, so you can comment on posts there, LinkedIn. And I'm Jackie at legallywisewomen.com.au.
Yay.
Another week.
Could be Christmas soon.
It will be. And this is episode 80. So it's amazing how quickly time flies, but also how many amazing conversations we've had.
I know. I can't believe it. Can't believe it's episode 80. It's insane.
We'll have to start thinking for something for episode 100.
Totally. I was going to say 100%.
All right, everyone. Catch you next time.
Catch you later.